Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Gray Bar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
It is the Gray Bar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauley, and hour number two of the program. Coming up later on this hour, we're going to relive the John Mozeliak press conference. Not going to play the whole thing for you, but what we're going to do is take some of his cuts that he had, some of the key talking points that he had today, and we'll play those back for you, and I'll give you some of my thoughts. But right now, very happy to welcome on to the program, part of the radio network for Mizzou Athletics and Mizzou Football. He is Chris Gervino. Chris, thanks so much for taking the time. Good to talk to you once again.
Hey, Matt, thank you. Good to be on with you.
Yeah, absolutely. So Mizzou wins, as they were expected to do this past weekend. UMass, bluntly, is not a very good team. But it seems like the season's kind of working out well, where you have a tough game and then you're able to kind of take a step back. But now from here, it's going to get a whole lot tougher between now and the end of the season.
Well, no question about it. They have really taken advantage of their schedule that was set up well with all the home games, of course, very unique in terms of five straight to start at home. And they'll have a sixth in a row after a bye as they prepare for Alabama on Saturday, the 11th of October. Bama, of course, has a tough game against Vanderbilt, and that is a tough game anymore. And, of course, they just played Georgia. But, yeah, Missouri's really taking care of business, and so far so good at 5-0. But I think it's really what most of us expected. And you're exactly right. Now it really gets challenging. Conference games the rest of the way, all seven of them.
The two real tough matchups that they've had so far, they beat Kansas in a big-time rivalry game, and then they take care of business against a good South Carolina team. Specifically to those two games, what did you learn about this Missouri football team?
Well, you know, I thought in preseason they really had a good deep roster, and Coach Drinkwitz himself said it's his best team he's had in terms of personnel and depth. And you never know until you see them get out on the field and play somebody. And by somebody, I mean really somebody. And I think Kansas and South Carolina are both legit teams, certainly in power conferences. And, you know, Missouri really dominated those two teams in two games. Now, the scores were relatively close, an 11-point win over Kansas, 9-point win over South Carolina. Certainly games were not decided until well in the fourth quarter, but gosh, you look statistically at those games, you would have thought Missouri would have won by a lot more, because they really dominated Kansas in terms of total yardage, first downs, time of possession. And it was unbelievable against South Carolina, almost like anything I hadn't seen before. 285 yards rushing for Missouri, I think minus six for Carolina. So, you know, they really controlled those games. But the one thing, of course, that is always a factor is turnovers. And Missouri didn't have many, but they had a big one in each of those games. Of course, a scoop and score on the fumble by quarterback Bo Prabula that Kansas cashed in on and took the lead early. And then they also had a turnover against South Carolina. And, of course, the one against UMass last week, it didn't really cost them because they were playing such an overmatched opponent. But that's one thing. They've had some turnovers now these last three games. And you know, they didn't cost them the game, but they made it a lot closer against the two power conference schools. And really, it should have been if you saw most of that game.
Bo Prabula has been really good, has completed better than 75% of his passes, better than 1,200 yards passing, 3-1 touchdown interception ratio, 9 touchdowns, 3 interceptions. Were you expecting this from him, or is this even better than expected?
You know, he's been really good, probably a little better than expected. And again, I want to see it against the conference now because it really steps up the competition clearly. But I knew at Penn State, he didn't get on the field much, obviously, behind Drew Aller, who many have thought will be a high draft pick and came here wanting to play. But when he played at Penn State, he gave a good account of himself. Last year, the biggest game that he had was at Wisconsin when Penn State, led by Prabula, came back with a pair of fourth-quarter touchdowns. He was 11 of 13 passing, 98 yards, a couple of scores, ran for 50 yards, all coming on and leading his team to come back. So he'd played a little bit, but not much. But, I had a feeling he'd be the guy, and I liked what I saw in preseason camp. And he's been really good. You're right. The completion percentage, the fact that he's running the ball so well. Again, it's not like he's throwing interception after interception. I think he's just got to be careful because he had a fumble that was a scoop and score, and then a couple of picks. And you just got to be really clean in the SEC with that meat of the schedule coming here quickly.
You mentioned the rushing yards compared to South Carolina, which that differential was insane. And I don't know the last time I saw anything like that. Ahmad Hardy is such a big part of that. The 730 yards through five games. And Chris, as I look at his stat line, one of the things that's most impressive, he only has 6 negative yards this year. This is a guy who finds a way to get positive yardage on almost every single time he touches the football.
Absolutely. That's probably the most impressive thing about him, and the yards after contact. I mean, he's just incredible. You get frustrated sometimes seeing these backs go east and west, as we say, but he is a north and south downhill runner, and he's quick to the hole, and then if somebody comes up, he will just run that person over. And I will tell you, Matt, again, out at camp, he's a guy that really jumped out at me more than anyone. I heard good things about him, but I mentioned this on the air the other night. When I saw him in preseason camp, my eyes about popped out of my head. I mean, he just was a difference maker and was just running people over. And you know, if he'd get past them, they couldn't catch him. And he's been outstanding. And, you know, Drinkwitz will tell you, and I think most people realize this about football teams, if you can run the ball and stop the other team's running game, that gives you a really good chance to win a lot of games. And that's been Missouri's recipe for success. Their rushing attack and their rushing defense has just been as good as you could expect for so far.
We're continuing to talk Mizzou football with our friend Chris Trevino. They're going into a bye week, and then they'll match up against an Alabama team that just had a fantastic win against Georgia. They'll be catching Alabama after a game against Vanderbilt. How valuable can this bye week be going into what is the toughest matchup of the year so far and one of the two or three toughest matchups of the season overall?
Right. Well, again, I think that schedule sets up well. I think this is part of it. Missouri has a bye week, so they'll go 2 weeks from last Saturday's win over UMass to the game against Alabama. Meanwhile, Alabama comes off a hard-fought, impressive win at Georgia. But while Missouri's resting this coming Saturday, Bama plays Vanderbilt. And, of course, Vandy beat Alabama last year. And Vanderbilt is so improved. And the one thing they are a physical football team. I mean, they, again, like Missouri's been doing this year, they will run the ball a lot. And they work to stop the run. Of course, Clark Lee, their head coach, former defensive coordinator at Notre Dame. Their quarterback, Diego Pavia, is so impressive and just a physical runner for a quarterback. I've seen a lot of running quarterbacks in my day, but never someone that just almost welcomes, if not initiates, contact. He's just a physical quarterback, almost like a running back there. And that's a good, solid team. I mean, Missouri had to come from behind last year to get that game to overtime and then to beat Vandy here at Faurot Field in overtime. So that's a real contest Saturday between Vanderbilt and Alabama. And no matter what happens on the scoreboard, you got to think that's going to take a bit of a physical toll on the Crimson Tide, who then have to get on the road and come here. So, again, the schedule sets up beautifully for Missouri for playing an SEC slate of games. It's about as good as it gets, and they'll look to keep it rolling, albeit against a really good team, certainly the best one by far they'll have played thus far.
Are you at all surprised that right now, in terms of rankings, the top three ranked teams out of the SEC are Ole Miss, Oklahoma, and Texas A&M? It's not Alabama. It's not Georgia. It's not LSU. It's not the classic SEC powers that, as we speak right now, and obviously a lot can change week to week in this conference, but those are the schools right now that are leading the way.
Right, and I think that's a good observation on your part. And, you know, that'll all shake itself out by the end of the season. We'll see if those teams are legit. Of course, Ole Miss just had the big win over LSU to stay unbeaten. Oklahoma has been really good. I mean, if their quarterback comes back healthy, Mateer, from the hand surgery, and they're saying he'll be back in about a month, that's about as tough a game as Missouri might have on its schedule, a road game at Oklahoma. That was a really good defense last year that, again, Missouri came from behind to beat at home late in the fourth quarter on a defensive touchdown. So, you know, Missouri's got to play these teams, Auburn, Vandy, Oklahoma. Arkansas on the road. Now, Arkansas just changed coaches. They may be hanging by threads at the end of the year. But all four of those teams, Missouri, yes, beat them last year, but at home and had to come back late in the fourth quarter, or in Vandy's case, overtime. So SEC is changing a little bit, but and I think Texas A&M is a good team. I've seen them. They've really got some firepower and a strong defense, and they really embarrassed Missouri last year in College Station. So Mizzou has the big games coming up, Bama and A&M at home, and, of course, at Oklahoma late November. So, you know, they're really going to have to prove themselves, not just the Tigers, but all those teams, to show who is legit and who can come through what's a grinder of an SEC schedule. And next year we go to 9 conference games, which will really be a blast, at least to watch, but probably not to coach in.
Did you like that? Did you like the rivalry games that were assigned to Missouri?
I did. I loved it. I knew it was going to be Oklahoma and Arkansas. Those were the two we had been told about for sure and had heard well ahead of time, and nothing changed there. Texas A&M might have surprised some, but really, you know, Missouri and A&M left the Big 12 for the SEC at the same time. They've had some good games, so that's not shocking either. And again, selfishly, there's not maybe a better place to go for a football game than Kyle Field in College Station, 102,733. It's the biggest stadium in the SEC. 5 of them, by the way, seat over 100,000. But, boy, with the band and the cadets, it's great, great tradition. Hard place to win. But purely selfishly, Matt, yes, I enjoy going there. And I love the fact they're playing 9 games. And, you know, Missouri, everybody gets to fatten up on a lower-level team a la Central Arkansas this season. I think it's Arkansas Pine Bluff next season. And then you get another, of course, non-conference game against a smaller school usually. But now you can have 10 legit games out of 12, 9 in the SEC and 1 power non-conference school, which for Missouri is going to be Kansas and Illinois most of the next several years, either or. So I love it. You know, these guys are getting paid a lot of money to coach football, so they should not shy away from challenges. And you want to be in the SEC, here you go. Have at it. And, you know, multiple teams will make the playoff, probably a good 4 this year, I would think, from probably the SEC and the Big Ten.
He is Chris Trevino, part of the Missouri Radio Network. Chris, thank you so much for taking some time with us. Enjoy the off weekend coming up, and hopefully we can talk to you again down the line.
Sounds good, Matt. Thanks a lot.
You bet. Thank you. That's Chris Trevino joining us, talking all things Mizzou football. Again, they are off this upcoming weekend, and then they've got a matchup against an Alabama team that's currently ranked number 10. That was a good win for Alabama against Georgia this past weekend. We'll see what they do against Vanderbilt coming up. Vanderbilt's a legit team, so that's going to be an interesting game. Maybe Alabama will be a little bit beat up going into that game against Missouri. We'll jump back into Cardinals baseball as we continue to take you through the evening. We've got you till 8 o'clock tonight. This is the Gray Bar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Gray Bar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. I want to run through just a couple more comments that have come in here. Again, we're going to replay some of what John Mozeliak had to say earlier today coming up in our next segment. Text message from the 314 says, the Cardinals are handcuffed by poor contract decisions. Contreras, Arenado, and Gray. Unless ownership eats a substantial amount of those contracts, this could take years. I would actually disagree with the premise there. The Arenado contract looks bad right now. Based off his production, the contract looks bad. They're probably, to move Arenado, you're probably going to have to eat at least half of the money left on that deal. That's the contract. He has just declined. That's what happens when you get older. He is a declining player, and he has declined 3-4 straight years in a row. I don't think the Contreras contract and the Gray contract are bad. The Contreras contract, without a doubt, is not a bad contract. He has outperformed his contract by any metrics. If you were to trade him, I would hope that you wouldn't have to eat a penny of that contract, because he has outperformed the contract. From a production standpoint, he has more than taken care of how much he's been paid for. You got to remember, like, people get stuck on what Gray's going to make next year. Is he a $35 million a year pitcher? No, he's not. But you got to remember, that contract was backloaded in a serious, major way. I believe it was $10 million that he was paid in year number one. I'm going to look that up real quick, but I believe it was $10 million. Yeah, he got paid $10 million in year one. That's how much the Cardinals paid him in year one. So they gave him the backloaded contract, knowing that they weren't going to pay much early on. So on that one, I think you have to look at the totality of the money. Now, if you're a team trying to acquire Sonny Gray, because it's what he's owed next year is $35 million plus a $5 million buyout if you don't pick up his 2027 option. So what you're trading away is either essentially a one-year $40 million contract because there's a buyout, or a two-year $65 million contract because that option in the final year is $30 million. That doesn't look great. So you can argue that it's a bad contract based off just the number for next year, but it is not a bad contract based off the totality of it. The Cardinals paid $10 million for Sonny Gray in the first season. So that's not a bad contract. That's all I'm saying. Message comes in on the stream, says, I'm 100% cool with Bloom and his Moneyball ways as long as they lower stadium tickets and concessions. I feel like they're charging fans as if they're trotting out a team of Albert Pujols and friends. Like, I'm not saying that they don't ever lower prices, but they're not doing that. That's not part of the deal. By the way, I don't know if I really buy the whole Heim Bloom Moneyball thing. Like, we were talking about this earlier in Redbird Rush Hour. He wants to increase pro scouts. He wants more scouts in the organization. Human beings who go to games and practices and showcases and look at baseball players. That's what he wants to do. Calling him a Moneyball guy, like, is he going to be more advanced in the data that the Cardinals use? Yeah, of course he is, because the Cardinals are not advanced at all right now. But I don't think that's fair. Real quick, we'll get to John Mozeliak coming up in just a minute. I have to give our good friend Kyle Sixta a little bit of grief over something. This is not connected to sports whatsoever. But while we have a moment before we get to break, Kyle, you recommended to me over the weekend that I should go to the St. Charles Oktoberfest, correct?
I did.
Okay. I have a beef with the good folks at the St. Charles Oktoberfest.
Let's hear it.
My beef is, so I get there, and it's an Oktoberfest. I wanted to drink a beer. I'm not a big drinker. I had a doctor's appointment the other day, and he's like, how do you drink a lot? I was like, maybe 20 drinks a year? Like, I'm really not a big drinker, but I wanted to have a beer at Oktoberfest. You have to buy the wristband to even have the right to buy the beer. Okay, mm-hmm. Whatever. I'll take it. Like, I didn't like it, but that's the way these things work. I'm not gonna complain too much about that. Here's what I'm gonna complain about. I don't carry cash, Kyle. Like most people nowadays, I'm just not a cash carrier.
I'm bad about it as well.
Yeah, I should probably do it more often. If you get into a situation you need to have cash, I get it. I'm not a cash carrier. So to buy the wristband for $5, they only took cash. Come on, people. Come on. And they have an ATM machine right there next to it, which, of course, has the fees and everything that goes along with it. And I have a strong moral stance against paying money to access my own money. I will not, if I can avoid it, if I'm not in an emergency situation, I will not go to an ATM machine that's going to charge me to access my own money. So I was frustrated with that. I wasn't going to do it. Just was not going to do it. I stood firm. And here's where I got really annoyed. They had people at the Oktoberfest who were clearly like the same people as the wristband people, because they were wearing the same shirts. They had the same thing in the back. The people who were like selling the raffle tickets or the 50-50, I don't know what they were. You know what they were carrying, Kyle?
What were they carrying?
They were carrying credit card machines.
Oh, boy.
So the wristband people are cash only, because what are you, if you're going to an Oktoberfest, what are you probably going to do?
Probably going to have some drinks.
You're going to drink a beer. So they knew that they had a captive audience, that if you did not have cash on you, you are not going to walk into an Oktoberfest and not buy the wristband. And the only thing you can do is go to the ATM and pay that exorbitant fee. So in addition to the $5 for the thing, you're paying for the other. And they knew it. They know what they're doing. You know what I did?
What'd you do?
I walked out. Did not buy the wristband. Did not go to the ATM machine. Was with the family. We left and we went and had lunch elsewhere.
Way to stay strong, Matt. They lost your business.
I know. I might be the first person in the history of Oktoberfest to walk into an Oktoberfest with the intent of drinking a beer and saying, nope, not doing it. Not going to do it. I'm going to walk out of here. So to the good folks at the St. Charles Oktoberfest, just let me buy my wristband with a credit card. Don't gouge me with an ATM machine that's right there. Come on. If I choose to go back, or maybe I'll just remember to take cash one way or the other. So, Kyle, I blame you because we were talking about Oktoberfest, and you've been in St. Charles for a while. You're like, oh, you should, Matt, you should go to the St. Charles one. It's pretty cool. It's nice.
It's a good time.
Mm-mm. No, it's not.
I apologize. I led you astray.
They try to bend you over and force you to go spend money on an ATM machine to get access to your own money. Sometimes I am motivated by the oddest thing. Okay, that is my rant. Thank you for putting up with me. We are going to take a break, and when we return, we're going to start to go back through some of the things that John Mozeliak did have to say today during the press conference. So we'll do that coming up in just a moment. This is a Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. Welcome back in. It is a Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX as we get set to take you until 8 o'clock this evening. Again, tomorrow is a big day. The Heim Bloom introductory press conference, we're going to air that for you at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning. And then as soon as that gets done, we are going to have instant reaction and coverage of it all the way until 1 o'clock. So the press conference will probably get done 10:30, 10:40 or so. And at that point, Tom Ackerman, Kevin Wheeler, Bernie Miklas, myself, Chris Ranji, we are all going to be with you. We'll see who else we might be able to get involved, but that's going to take up pretty much the rest of the time after the press conference all the way until the end of the 12 o'clock hour, which is the general Gas House Gang hour. So we've got you covered coming up tomorrow, and look forward to being able to talk with you on what's going to be a very busy and very important day. We've talked through a lot of what John Mozeliak had to say earlier today. I know when we get to this point of the evening, there's probably a good number of people who are listening who did not hear the press conference. What I'm not going to do, I'm not just going to replay the press conference for you, but what I do want to do is play a number of the things that Mo did say, and then I'll give you my comments on some of them. So we're going to have a little bit of fun with audio right now as we go through much of the press conference and what was said as John Mozeliak opened up his comments today. He did acknowledge that it is a good time for him to move on from the position.
I've been asked over the past year why I stepped down. And to me, it became simple. I love this job, but I also knew it was time for a change. Trying to reinvent yourself every year can be challenging. The drumbeat was getting louder, candidly real loud, for a new voice, and I heard it. Speaking of change, I do believe it can be a good thing. Having a fresh voice, a different perspective, new ideas will be healthy for the St. Louis Cardinals.
There continues to be a lot of focus on what has happened recently, the last 3 years of not being a playoff team. Even, and anytime I mention that, I always hear from folks will say, well, they also haven't won the playoff success over the last 10 years hasn't really been there as well. I push back on that a little bit. Not that they had more success than they did, but I thought there was some flukiness that went along with it. The playoffs are inherently fluky. But to people's credit who push back when I say that, the bottom line is the bottom line, and they haven't had the playoff success that you would like to have in recent years, even before this last 3-year stretch with no playoffs at all. All that being said, Mo a good number of years. He's been the president of baseball operations since the start of the 2008 season. He's been in the organization for 30 years, and he made it clear he's proud of his body of work.
Well, there are a lot more highs than lows, so I think that makes it easy to balance. But it is a demanding job, and I understood that. You know, when you think about the 30 clubs you can work for, not all are the St. Louis Cardinals and have the history of the St. Louis Cardinals. So, you know, I took a lot of pride in us being successful, took a lot of pride in us trying to be innovative and creative throughout the years. And, you know, did we get it? Were we 100% perfect? No. We made mistakes. We recognize that. But there is something to be said. If you're not making mistakes, you might not be trying. So, you know, overall, when I look back at these last 18 years or the 30 years, I do it with great pride.
When you think about somebody in his position, he's not just constructing a roster. He is in a very important position of management. And there are a lot of people who have worked under him. And a lot of those people have gone on to do really, really important things in other organizations. And he does, when he was talking about his impact on the game of baseball, his impact on the Cardinals, talked a little bit about the impact that he had on the people that he has come in contact with.
You know, I'm not up here to pat myself on the back, but I hope that the people I've worked with, that I have had some positive influence on them. And, you know, obviously there's going to be a new regime, there's going to be changes, and there's going to be things done maybe differently than I may have done them. But that doesn't make it right or wrong. But that's the ability to, or the good thing to have that new voice. You know, as I think back at my career and the people you've touched or the people that you were involved in, and there's so many of them, but I feel like I when I look back at my career, I hope the impact I made on them was something positive and lasting.
There's been a lot of talk, and I've been somebody that has certainly discussed this a fair amount. What was it like for him this year? Because he was still the president of baseball operations, but much of the infrastructure from a staffing standpoint, it was no longer his guys. The Heim Bloom infrastructure, people who came to the Cardinals to work for Heim Bloom, were in place. The Rob Serfolios of the world, and there was many others beyond that. So you had to wonder if this year was different for him, but what he said today was that really this year did not feel all that different.
It was fairly normal. You know, my interactions with Heim and Surf on what was happening on the player development side, you know, we had a standing meeting every Monday, so I was kept in the loop. I did not spend a lot of time traveling to minor league cities like I've done for the last 17 years, but that's why I have confidence in directionally where this is going. But as far as like the day-to-day, I was still very much involved and kind of did my normal job. Big question is, what am I going to do tomorrow? Right? That's the stress.
Benjamin, do you have one?
I do, yeah. Mo, from the day you were hired until now, can you share some insight into how building a baseball team, just the business of being in the front office, has changed, evolved?
Sure. I guess you're asking me to go back to our, 1993. Payrolls were much different. I think free agents were paid on what they did, not what they might do. Collectively, the draft had unlimited rounds, so you could take a lot of shots on goal, if you will. But what's changed is just the economic landscape of the game. And I think what's happening right now in baseball is you're starting to see a wider and wider spread of the haves and have-nots. And so if you're not part of the haves, then you got to be really, really smart on how you start strategically thinking about roster building. And so, you know, under Bill DeWitt, you can think back to like 1998, you know, when we draft, or 1997, when we drafted Rick Ankiel, and 28 other teams passed on him at the time, and we took a shot. And so Bill always had us thinking about drafting and development. And I think over the 30 years, I think we did a pretty good job at that. And now it's, what more can you squeeze out of that orange as you try to get more on the margins? And I think you look at teams right now that are successful that aren't large market teams, i.e. Milwaukee, they're doing a really good job at that. And that's what we need to replicate.
Bottom line for the Cardinals right now, they're not meeting expectations. They're not playing at the level that you want them to play at. They're not winning the number of games that you want them to win. And the calendar's turning to October, and their season is over. Mozeliak said there continues to absolutely be high expectations for this team. Those expectations have not been met, but he believes the team is on the right track.
When we look back at the past few years, we haven't gotten to where we wanted to, right? I think under Bill DeWitt and that ownership group, we always went into it trying to get to October and hopefully get to the World Series and win. Obviously, you know, there's only one winner every year. I think the past few years we've had some headwinds. When you think back to just like, you know, the revenues have changed. But overall, I think where the minor league system is, it's in a strong spot. I think we've had a couple strong drafts, which is certainly going to be helpful. I think our international department has done yeoman's work, and I think you'll start to see some of those returns in the future. So, you know, net-net, I feel like our system's in a pretty good spot. So I would be optimistic.
Being on that right track, much connected to the fact that a new regime is coming in. Chaim Bloom is going to be the president of baseball operations. And Mo says that he feels like all the changes that go along with a regime change will be good for the organization.
What does change mean for the St. Louis Cardinals organization? And above all, what does it mean for our fans? The economic landscape of baseball has continued to shift over the past decade. How you build rosters looks completely different based on your market size. The ability for a small market team to be successful will require the following traits: innovation, never lose sight of your core principles, and remain nimble and flexible in the ever-fluid environment. And finally, I want to wish the new leadership team success. It's been a pleasure working with Chaim and Cerf over the past year, and I wish them the best. 30 years is a long time. 18 in the seat is a long time, but it has been an honor and a privilege to do this in this great city of St. Louis. It is a baseball city, it is my home, and I think the future for this city and this team is bright. So thank you.
This next cut, and we've talked about it, but I'll just say it again, might be the single most important thing that was said and might be the thing that most points us towards what we are going to hear coming up tomorrow. Mo is proud of the fact that they did not do a true rebuild during his tenure, but that might change based off the words that come out of Chaim Bloom's mouth coming up tomorrow.
The unique thing about the role I had with the Cardinals is we never tried to rebuild. You know, the words you may hear tomorrow might be different, but that's for them to speak. But in terms of regrets, I don't have any.
Sidebar on that very quickly. I don't think Mo says that unless, because he knows what's going to be said tomorrow. I don't think he says that unless there is a clear indication that that's going to be the message coming up tomorrow from Chaim Bloom. So what does it take to be a really good team, to have the success that you want to have? Well, part of it is having great players. And part of it is the fan support. Part of it is playing in a ballpark that people love going to, in a city that supports them. Like, there's a lot of different things, and Mo kind of hit on all of them because there's so many things that you throw into the pot that eventually results in a good winning team. And Mo said they're still looking for that next great player as the organization is continuing to fight through some other adversity.
As you guys can imagine, we've always had just like a successful group of core players. You know, dating back to when the Cardinals first acquired Mark McGwire, and then the emergence of Albert Pujols, Yadier Molina. But at that same time, we acquired Jim Edmund, Scott Rowland, and then you fast forward to Matt Holliday, and then the emergence of a Matt Carpenter, and then acquiring Berkman, Beltran, and then that led us into the Goldschmidt, Arenado era. But what ended up happening in that time was, you know, the elite player lost a step, and that's the tough part to balance because, you know, we definitely felt like internally we were still producing a lot of those complementary players, but we didn't have the type of player that emerged as the next great. And when I reflect on this, I mean, I even go back to something like when Oscar Tavares passed away, and all of a sudden we had a pivot because we lost that future middle of the order hitter that we thought we were going to have. And those are difficult challenges. But some of those headwinds are also what's happening in our city, with, you know, fans sometimes complain about parking, the safety. And these are all issues that have to be addressed as we continue to move forward. But I think, you know, with the investments that are happening downtown, I think everybody should be excited about where this city is headed. And so the Cardinals have always been successful, not because of our TV contract, but really from our fan base. And if we can get people to feel safe and wanting to come back down here again and re-engage, I think that's where the Cardinals will take that step forward. And as far as like the infrastructure of what's happening with the baseball operations specifically, they're going to be positioned well. Smart group of guys working upstairs. They understand where they need to go, what they need to accomplish. And from that standpoint, now that I put my fan hat on, I'm excited about the future.
He did comment a couple things on this past season. Don't want to spend too much time on this because we are looking forward, but I thought there were a couple notable things. First off, this season coined the runway season. Did they learn what they would have liked to have learned this season? Well, not totally.
Probably not as clearly as we'd hoped, right? I think some players we were hoping to learn a little bit more about, but in the end, I think that's the challenge of this offseason and what really lies ahead in the future. And I don't want to get into what I think each player needs to do. I think that's Haim and his team and Ollie have to like decide what that looks like. But, you know, I do think the one takeaway I do have on this year was a lot of those younger players learned a lot. They had a drink from the fire hose. Maybe they didn't make the right adjustments or the adjustments soon enough, but hopefully they grow from that. You know, when you get an opportunity to play every day, the goal is, can you produce, can you post? And if you can do those two things, you can be in this game a long time. But if you're not doing those two things, things can be difficult for you. And I think our players learned a lot from that this year.
Also, this team, they were in playoff contention most of the year. They were not mathematically eliminated till the final weekend of the season. They would make little runs, and they would get three or so games back. They're a team that sold at the deadline. They're a team that made one move in the offseason to get Phil Maton, a guy that doesn't even finish the season with the team because he gets traded. So considering how close they got, considering what happened with the Cincinnati Reds and the way they were able to steal that final spot from the New York Mets, does Mo have any regrets in not doing more to the roster this year?
Reflecting back on this season last night, and you think about like close games you lose or games you give up in the ninth or in the extra innings, and that's why, like, as a manager, as a coach, you are always trying to impress upon players like everything does matter, because it might not feel like it at that given moment, but it does. And when you finish three or four games out of something, or you go into the final series finally being eliminated, it just shows you how close these margins are. And I don't regret anything we did this year in the sense of we knew it was going to be, you know, difficult to try to thread this needle. You know, if you're looking at hindsight, would it have been smarter to try to trade some of the players that we ended up trading in the offseason? But we wanted to give our fan base some level of hope. We wanted to try to see if a couple guys did click and get hot. And, you know, unfortunately, we did come up short.
And then just two more quick things for Mo before we wrap this up in terms of playing back much of what he said today. He was asked, does he see a scenario where in the future he is serving as a president of baseball operations for another team?
To answer your question, I don't envision myself doing that. Have some connection to the game at some point, possibly. But I do think for the next couple months, I'd really like to just catch my breath and step away.
A lot of people have thought maybe he has some type of role with the Cardinals moving forward. There are still some projects that are being worked on, most notably the spring training complex, which he has been very, very involved in that. So would there be a possibility in the very near future he could be working in the organization again, not so much in baseball operations, but working to finish out some special projects?
I don't know, but I don't think so. We'll see.
That is John Mozeliak's press conference earlier today. When it comes to his future, I kind of, and I don't have any inside information on this, but I kind of expect one of two things to happen. I think he stays involved in the game of baseball at some point. I don't know how long he stays away. He's previously said, not today, but he's previously said that he feels like, out of respect for Haim, he probably needs to be away from the Cardinals for a while, that if he were to come back and do like special projects and things like that, it might feel like he's looking over the shoulder. So I think he's cognizant of that. But I could certainly see a scenario where he comes back to the Cardinals in more of a business-type side and not so much a baseball-type side and works on projects and does some other things. I think that might be something that he would have some interest in. Or I could see him going to another organization and not being a president of baseball operations or a general manager or anything, but certainly serving as a consultant. You know, people have connected him to the Colorado Rockies because he's got deep ties to Denver and previously worked for that organization. So maybe that's what it's going to look. Maybe he's just going to completely get out of baseball. I do suspect we are not going to hear from him for quite some time. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll wrap up the program. It's the Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Back at it for just a couple more minutes here on a Graybar Sports Open Line. Coming up after the 8 o'clock news, it is a Gas House Gang replay. If you missed it from earlier today, I joined both Tom Ackerman and Chris Ronji immediately following the Mo press conference. And we talked a little bit about what Mo had to say, but we also talked about what it looks like for the team moving forward. Thought it was a good conversation. So if you missed it earlier today, it's coming up. If you didn't miss it earlier today, you can listen to it again and enjoy it again. Hopefully that would be the goal. A reminder for you of what's going to be coming up tomorrow. Haim Bloom meets with the media as the Cardinals president of baseball operations for the first time at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning. We expect the DeWitts to be part of that conversation as well. That will probably go maybe 35, 40 minutes or so. And then as soon as that is done, the entire KMOX sports team will assemble and we'll be with you until 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Tom Ackerman, Chris Ronji, Kevin Wheeler, Bernie Miklas, myself, will all kind of be in and out. Might have some other folks that join us as well. Certainly we'll be able to take your comments. And so tomorrow is the day where we start to learn the true direction of where this team is going and what it might look like this upcoming season. I said it multiple times today. I felt like that comment from Mo today where he talked about not rebuilding during his tenure, but that may change based off what we hear from Haim. I thought that was a really important thing that was said, and we'll see what that actually ends up looking like or sounding like, I guess, when Haim talks coming up tomorrow. So be tuned in. We'll be with you starting at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning for our coverage of the Haim Bloom press conference. That is it for this edition of the program. Thanks to Brendan Schaefer and Chris Gervino for joining us. And we will talk to you again very soon for another Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.